Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome everybody, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for June 13th, 2012. I hope everybody's doing well. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I hope you're doing well. Wow, we are screaming into June. Can you believe this? A couple weeks away, and it's the 4th of July. I've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to be talking about anger today. You know how you get angry? And maybe, you hate to admit it, but it's a little bit out of proportion to the situation. Maybe someone said, hey, what are you getting so angry about? Or the other side of this, all you're trying to do is have a conversation or understand someone's point of view, and they are super angry, and you're wondering, where's this coming from? I don't get it. Well, we're going to talk about this today. We're going to talk about anger, where it comes from, and how sometimes what you think you're angry about is not even close to the real reason of what you're angry about. So it's everything you always wanted to know about anger, but we're afraid to ask. I've got some great health news, too. You're going to want to stick around for the second half of the show in the news. How anxiety and insomnia are related. The latest studies that look at the areas of the brain where this is located. Very, very important for those of you that are having problems with sleep or suffering with an anxiety disorder. This is breaking news out of California, so stick around for that. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Any questions or comments, please don't hesitate to email me, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay, now, it happened a couple times last week and then early in the week about miscommunication in my sessions, miscommunication between people, and the underlying issue was anger. Anger and rage. And I thought I would bring this up because it was a recurring topic, and there's no doubt that this comes up in our day-to-day conversations. I've said this a lot on the show, and when we think about the complexity in our lives, the different experiences that you and I have had in growing up, the stressors we've faced, the highs, the lows, it's amazing with all these different type of life experiences that people still are able to relate and understand each other to the way that they can, that we can communicate effectively. At times really amazes me given how complex our life experiences are and how varied they are. But this kept coming up this week, and I wanted to kind of review this and talk about this issue of anger and really how that relates to communication and each other. There's a particular circumstance which I found really interesting to talk about because I think a lot of people can relate to it. This was an individual who comes to see me regularly, and she was talking to a friend of hers. And no matter what she would say, the friend would get angry at her. She'd turn it around and blame her for things. For instance, she might say something like, "Wow, it's been a tough time for me, and finances are tough, and we have to really pinch our pennies for the bills." And her friend would be like, "You don't even know what it's like. You have no idea at all. You've lived a charmed life. I can't believe that you're even complaining." Or she would try to feed back to her and say, no, that's not what I meant at all. I just want to let you know what's going on in our lives. I don't want to hear it, her friend would respond. I don't want to hear it. You never listen to anybody's feelings at all. You don't care. She was really upset at her friend, and she didn't understand why she was getting so angry at her. And she felt terrible. She really felt guilty that maybe she was upsetting her friend who kept getting angry at her. And this brought up a topic that I really want you to think about here as we move forward, particularly as it relates to anger. What I told my patient was that, look, your friend is not getting angry at you. Your friend is getting angry through you. Now, I'll say that again. Your friend is not getting angry at you. She is simply getting angry through you. Now, what does this mean? What does this mean? And how does this apply in our lives? And it's a critical, critical point. I think it's one of the most critical points, if you ask me, in day-to-day communications. It doesn't have to be anger when it hits a flashpoint. But when people disagree or aren't communicating well, what we have to do is take a step back and try and see the situation, if we possibly can, through another person's eyes. Oftentimes what happens is when a person releases, let's say, anger when we're fighting with each other, the hotter a person gets, the more anger there is about a particular situation, the less it is about that particular situation. The hotter they get, the less it has to do with that moment. The moment kind of serves the purpose to release the anger, okay? This is what I mean when I say people don't get angry at us. They get angry through us, particularly when that anger seems way, way out of proportion or was completely unfounded at all. Oftentimes, we're just the canvas. We happen to be in the way, wrong place, wrong time. And that anger gets unleashed on us. I always tell people to think about ourselves as almost like a canvas, a white canvas, right? That an artist will use just as he's starting to paint. And think of the anger, those emotions that get thrown at us as paint. We are the canvas. And it doesn't matter what we say, because what is coming out of that person, the frustration and the anger, is because it's lit up something in them. And through us, they release that anger. So as I told my patient, she's not getting angry at you. She's getting angry through you. We have so many varied life experiences. And we really, no matter how hard we try sometimes, can't fully understand what a person is going through. Something that we say, a comment, a joke, the way that we've reacted to someone, whether it's a bit short or a bit gruff, even though we didn't intend to spark anything, if that person was feeling particularly frustrated, or if it reminded them of a time they might have gotten dismissed or just not paid attention to, not listened to, just that simple gesture that we make lights somebody up and they get angry. Now, we are going to feel it, of course, and we are going to own it because we're human. And what happens then? If we start to get angry, we start yelling back sometimes. We're human. We can't always sit there logically and say, oh, yes, I think this is because of X, Y, and Z in Peter's life. That's why he got so angry at me. It doesn't happen that way. And what I tell people to think about is, it may be impossible in the moment to not react or get upset. But when you're thinking about it afterwards, thinking, my gosh, why did Peter get so upset because I brought up X or Y or Z? If you're that confused about it and not understanding it, it probably didn't have to do with you, but it happened through you. Okay? Now, I've used this example before, but let me use it again to illustrate this point. This was about, maybe about a year or two ago. My wife and I and my son, at that time we had one. We were in Target, and my wife was looking at some clothes in Target, and I tended to drift away. I was over by the office section, just kind of looking at office supplies. There you go. I'm looking at office supplies. And all of a sudden, I heard my name being called, Peter. And I'm like, oh man, what is that? And then again, Peter. I was starting to get angry. I mean, why is my wife yelling my name at me? And finally, Peter. Wasn't that loud, but I was upset. Three times she called out my name. I go storming over. What are you doing? I said to her. What do you mean? I just wanted to show you this. Which shirt do you think he would like? And I said, wait a minute. You cannot yell my name like that. She's like, what are you talking about? I didn't even yell it. I knew you were in office supplies. I just wanted you over here. You didn't answer. I said, listen, do not scream my name like that. And she said, wait a minute. Hold on. I don't know what you're getting angry about, but stop it. And I stopped cold. I stopped cold, and in an instant, I remembered what I was angry about. It had nothing to do with my wife at all. Not at all. But I went back immediately into middle school when I was playing down the street with my friends, and my mom would open up the window and yell my name out to make sure I was okay. And then my friends would make fun of me because my mom is screaming my name to make sure I'm okay. So I was embarrassed, and that always got me angry. I never, never liked somebody calling out my name in that way. Now, in the moment, when Sophia said that to me in Target, I wasn't thinking of my mother. I wasn't thinking about middle school or football. All I knew is that it got me angry, and I went over, and I was mad. I was hot. Now, what's going on here, right? I'm hot out of proportion to what she's done. Again, like I said, the hotter, the further away it is from the moment. And I wasn't angry at her, because as soon as I thought about it, it was the past I was angry about. I didn't like my name being called out like that because of how I felt in the past, but I got angry through her. It wasn't about what she said, but what it lit up in me. Now, I realized it right away. I explained it to her. I apologized, and I said I would do a better job in the future. But this is what I'm talking about. That's a very small example. There are much more serious and severe examples, but that's a small example of how what's going on in our minds, what's happened in our life, can be lit up, and we will react in a situation that has nothing to do with that situation. We're getting angry through people because it is a window or a canvas that we can release that anger upon. And it happens a lot in our families, those that we love. We get so angry with them. Why? Why would we get so angry with the people that we love the most? And as I always try to explain it to my patients, is that there's less of a chance that they're going to go away. You can't do that at work. You'll lose your job. A friendship, someone will walk away. But our family, unless we do something horrible, they're not going to go away. It doesn't justify it. It's not a rationalization either. It's never okay when it's not appropriate. And it's certainly not appropriate to be abusive with our family members. But we know they're not going to go away. And oftentimes, that is why the family gets the full force of the anger. But we see this in examples all the time. I believe, at least from a communications issue, this is the biggest reason why people come in to see me. It's hard. And we don't always do a good job in the moment to take a breath, step back, and not either feel offended or hurt where we feel we have to react back. Think about that. We get angry. But why are we getting angry? And it may be an important thing that you consider in the future. At those times when either you're starting to bubble up with anger as to why and what the situation is, and is it really relevant with regards to that person that you're talking to? Or is it lighting up something in you? And if it is, how do you pull back and not unleash on somebody? Or if you're on the receiving end of that anger or that tirade, how are you able to pull back and say, wait a minute, I know what I feel. I know what I've done right or wrong. This must be something that's going on with this person that has nothing to do with me. It is the essence of all of the problems of communication, whether it's as simple as a miscommunication between my wife and I in Target, or something as serious as anger turned violent with something like road rage. We need to be able to understand that oftentimes we are not getting angry at people, or they're not getting angry at us, but simply they are getting angry through us, or we are getting angry through somebody else. It's so important to understand this, because once we understand that well, then we realize it's not so much about us if we're feeling it, someone's unloading on us. Or on the other hand, if we're releasing it, we owe it to that other person, like I did with my wife, to explain ourselves and apologize. The more we learn about it, the more we can understand about where the anger is coming from, the more that we grow. And the more that we grow, the richer our communications and our relationships are. You'll see it. So take the time to think about that anger. Oftentimes, it has absolutely nothing to do with the reasons we think we are getting angry. It is very complex, but it is worth thinking about. Your relationships, I'm sure, are worth it. And that is just one huge step that we can take down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, you know, this was one of those weeks for health news, particularly psychological health news, that was very, very busy. A busy week. The first headline: insomnia may lead to higher anxiety levels. Now, we've all been there. All of you know what you feel like if you haven't slept well, even one night. But particularly if you have a period of time when you're not sleeping well with insomnia. It's a critical, critical part to our overall health and well-being. In fact, in my practice, it's one of the main reasons that people will come in to see me. The way that emotions will impact depression and anxiety on their sleep. So we know that that can be very, very difficult. We know that it can make us very fatigued in general, physically. But after a couple nights sleep, we can be very irritable, depressed, and anxious. Well, the latest research from the University of California at Berkeley showed that sleep loss, insomnia, can really exaggerate the degree to which we worry or that we anticipate impending events that are emotional. And it found that this tendency is especially the case among highly anxious people. These folks are already vulnerable to anxiety. So how does this happen? Well, first, sleep loss and an amplification of emotional responses are two very, very common features in anxiety disorders. And for the longest time, it was thought that these two features of anxiety disorders, that you don't sleep and that the response to threats or worries is overamplified when you're anxious, were thought to be independent of each other. But this new study suggests that they may interact with each other. So what did the researchers do? Well, they took people through MRI brain scans, the fMRI, functional MRI, where you can actually see functional activity, not just anatomy. But they took these individuals, the volunteers, and they took them through two phases. One, they evaluated them after a normal night's sleep when they were rested, and one after a sleep-deprived night of sleep, okay? And what they did was they subjected them to emotional experiences that were either negative or that were benign, positive, not really anything that should evoke an emotional response. And what they found was that the MRI scans showed that when individuals were sleep deprived, it significantly amplified, it increased the buildup of anticipatory anxiety, the worry about what might happen in deep, deep emotional brain centers, especially the amygdala. And that part of the brain is associated with how we respond to negative and unpleasant experiences. In some of these emotional centers of the brain, they found that when you sleep-deprived someone, it increased the activity for this anticipatory reaction by more than 60%. Depriving yourself of sleep or losing sleep makes you more prone to be worried about what may happen. And it was happening literally in the brain, not just because we're fatigued. Now, what else did they find? Well, the strength of this sleep deprivation effect on how they worried was related to how naturally anxious a person was. People who were more anxious had a huge amplification of this effect, while those that were more calm or just more chilled individuals didn't get as activated in that way. And the researchers felt that the results of this study suggest that anxiety may significantly elevate emotional dysfunction and the risk that comes with not sleeping well. So a baseline level of anxiety, natural tendency to worry, combined with sleep deprivation or sleep loss, fired up those areas in the brain that normally are associated with worry, and they make it even worse. Now, according to the lead author of the study, Andrea Goldstein, she said, quote, "Anticipation is a fundamental brain process, a common survival mechanism across numerous species. Our results suggest that just one night of sleep loss significantly alters the optimal functioning of this essential brain process, especially among anxious individuals. This is perhaps never more relevant, considering the continued erosion of sleep time that continues across our society." End of quotes. And I think that that's the most important part here. Because we're such a go, go, go society, that we, all of us, will take time away from sleep in service of taking care of other obligations. Be careful, and I'm talking to myself here as well, be careful, because there are real changes that happen in the activity of those areas of the brain that are responsible for anxiety, especially if you're already an anxious person. Okay, now the next piece of news, and this I thought was really appropriate in today's social media hyper-connected world. The headline, "Your Facebook profile photo may reveal unconscious cultural differences." A really, really interesting study. They looked at the Facebook profile photos. We've all been there. We know that. As typical, I come late to the party. I've only gotten on Facebook over probably the last 5 or 6 months since the healthymind.com went live. But we know that that profile photo is really important. And for some people, it can be downright agonizing on deciding which is the right shot for that profile photo. Should it be more casual, kind of lighthearted and personal, or should it be a more professional photo? Should it be more artsy and abstract, or should it just be kind of serious? Well, according to this study, which was a joint effort between UT Dallas and the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, the photos that we choose, certainly they represent our individual preferences, but it also appears that they reflect more deeply rooted and maybe unconscious cultural differences. Now, we've known for a long period of time that culture can affect language and custom, but it also affects how we experience the world and process that information. For example, Western cultures, like here in America, condition us to think of ourselves as highly independent entities. We can do it. Or in a more cynical offshoot, me, me, me. Now, in East Asian cultures, though, community and interdependence is really a vital part of the culture. And we see that in that Westerners tend to focus on central objects or faces more than on their surroundings when we look at either a scene or a painting or a photo. But those in Eastern cultures tend to focus on the context as well as objects such as the scenery behind a person. Now, for this particular study, what the researchers did was that they looked at about 500 active Facebook users from the United States and East Asian countries like Hong Kong, Singapore, and Taiwan. And what they found was fascinating. They found that the profile photos of Americans are more likely to focus, surprise, surprise, on the individual's face, while the profile of East Asian individuals on Facebook tended to de-emphasize the face, and they captured more background features. They also found that Americans in general showed greater smile intensity in the faces compared to Eastern cultures. I thought it was interesting because it really demonstrates that the cultural differences in the focus of attention between Eastern and Western cultures can come out even in something like our Facebook profile photos. Now, according to one of the researchers, this was UT Dallas professor Dr. Denise Park. She stated, quote, "We believe these findings relate to a cultural bias to be more individualistic and independent in the U.S. and more communal and interdependent in Asia." End of quotes. It turns out that our photos and generally our profiles reveal an extended social context where it doesn't mirror just ourselves individually, but also the characteristics and social behaviors of our culture. According to another researcher from the University of Illinois, Dr. Chow-Mao Hong, quote, "This study presents a novel approach to investigate cognition and behaviors across cultures by using Facebook as a data collection platform." End of quotes. Our profile photos telling us much, much more than just who we are as individuals, but really the culture that we've been brought up in. So the next time you're on Facebook, take the time to pay just a little bit more attention to the profile photos of your friends and others you come across. I bet you will start to notice the differences. It's really, really interesting if you take the time to do that. Those images reveal a lot more about us than we think. Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Stress may delay brain development in the early years. Stress may affect brain development in children, altering the growth of a specific piece of the brain and abilities associated with it. This, according to the researchers at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. The next headline, PAP therapy, which is known as positive airway pressure therapy, improves depressive symptoms in all patients with sleep apnea. Amazing. A study of almost 800 patients using positive airway pressure treatment, PAP treatment, to treat sleep apnea had improvements in depressive symptoms. And this was the fascinating part. Even if people followed the prescribed PAP regimen only partly. The importance of a good night's sleep, not only in anxiety, as I talked about early, but in depression as well, especially as it relates to sleep apnea. And finally, the headline, losing money, emotions, and evolution. Financial loss, we know, can lead to irrational behavior. But now, research from the Wiseman Institute reveals that the effects of loss go even deeper. Loss, it turns out, can compromise our early perception and interfere with our grasp of the true situation. And this, according to the researchers, may have profound implications for our understanding of the underlying mechanism for post-traumatic stress disorder. Learning about PTSD from losing money. Wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, anything, please don't hesitate to contact me via email. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.